Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Fuel your day with Green Firm's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillet. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Thanks to Jenny Green for entertaining us this afternoon. It's Friday the 19th of November and this is Game On. Coming up today, Darren O'Neill will preview Jason Quigley's huge fight tonight as he and Andy Lee plot a path to the world title.
No, we're going to get in there. Me and Andy have a great game plan put in place already. You know, we've been working on a lot of things and I'm going to get in there, bring the best version of me that I possibly can.
Alan Cawley and Fergal Brennan are ready for the return of the Premier League, plus it's the final round of action in the Eredivisie League. Meanwhile, in rugby, Andy Farrell names a strong side for the threat Argentina bring to Dublin.
It's not so long ago that they beat the best team in the world, so this will be perfect for them, you know, to come to Dublin and try and get a result. I believe they've not had a result against us here, so I suppose that will spur them on.
Plus, we'll have Jane Mangan on racing, taekwondo talent Jack Woolley, and an Irish head-to-head in golf. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game on 2FM.
Now, Alan Cawley is with me in studio. Alan, the last night of the Eredivisie League, Shamrock Rovers title party, it's been called. They're hosting Drogheda later. It'll be on telly. I'm heading over. My lads are very excited about it, and all their friends are going as well. Look, it's going to be a lot of fun for the kids, for sure, but I was thinking about it a bit earlier and I was listening to an interview with Jack Byrne. You do get the sense that the wheel is starting to turn with the League of Ireland, I think.
They never sent me an invite to the title party.
I'm not surprised.
No, it is, Marie. It should be a great night, obviously, over there, as you say, the trophy presentation for them. And it's hard to believe it is the last night, the time, obviously, and I think everybody will agree, not just us involved in sport, but time is flying by, unfortunately, for everyone. But certainly for the football, I think when you look at the season that we've had, they have been the best team. I don't think they hit the heights of what they did last year, and largely due to the fact, it's ironic that you mentioned Jack Byrne, because that's the main reason. I don't think they hit the heights because they've lost Jack last year, and obviously Aaron McAniff as well. And between them, I think there was 35 goals and all sorts of numbers of assists, and they were absolutely brilliant. And not only were they the best two players in the league, the best two players for Shamrock Rovers, they were also the best two players in the league. So that was going to be a huge void. To be fair to Stephen Bradley, he got Danny Mandrio in, who I think has huge potential to maybe go further afield as well. I think he's that good, and he's contributed, he's gotten into double figures. So they have been the best team overall without hitting those heights, and for those reasons. But you look at, obviously, the other games around as well. There's still competition for fourth place as well. So, obviously, Bowes and Derry are vying for that. I think St. Pat's have had a really good season and finishing second. Sligo getting to Europe as well. They'll be delighted with that. So, I think what we'll see next year, Marie, is that it'll be a bit more competitive. But that huge news today that Jack is back in town, I think that might just separate them again from the rest, because he's that good. And to have him back is brilliant. Obviously, Damien Duff is going to be involved in the league as well next year. And you asked me the question there in terms of things slowly but surely turning. And I can certainly see and sense that. And not only with the League of Ireland and the Premier Division and possibly the First Division, but you look at the underage setups and the structures as well. And there was obviously a lot of those games streamed, the finals over the last couple of weeks, the underage finals as well. You look at the Women's League last week as well, and the Women's Cup final this weekend. And overall, then you broaden it out, I suppose, to Stephen and the senior team. I was in Tala for the under-21s the other night, and it was brilliant to see them get a result. The under-19s qualified for the elite phase as well, in their qualification games last week as well. So overall, the broader picture, you would have to sense that there's a lot of positivity going on, and hopefully long may it continue. There's a long way to go, we all know that, but hopefully it's the start of something new and bright.
Yeah, like, you're finishing the season and there's so much to look forward to for next season, but another thing that I think is quite important as well, that it does feel like there is a better connection between the League of Ireland and the international team. So, like, even just to give the context of maybe the experiences that I'm having, is that all my kids' pals who are at the Portugal game are all going to Shamrock Rovers to watch the party tonight, and then they're all going to play their games tomorrow. It's like it's all starting to feed into each other, and that that interest in the different levels is there. Maybe it's just where I'm living and the associations that the people that I know have with the different teams, but I didn't have that a few years ago. I didn't experience that a few years ago.
See, the biggest problem with Irish football over the years is the fractured nature of it, Marie, and when I used to have the chats or discussions or arguments or debates or around it, we used to always say that it should start at the highest level you can play at and filter down. That was always my view of it. But it never felt like that, because there was always a disconnect between maybe the schoolboy section and then obviously into the League of Ireland and whatever, and the facilities that they had and some clubs had and some clubs didn't have. Then there was the whole junior scene as well, was completely separate. And it was all just so fractured. Now, it still is slightly fractured, but I think with the introduction of the underage setup, you mentioned there the fact that obviously the connection with maybe the League of Ireland into the senior team. Now, that connection has to be there because of the obviously with Brexit coming, and also just the landscape, the way the whole thing has changed. Whereas before, the norm was that lads went away 14, 15, 16 across the water to England, almost feeling like there wasn't much here for them and that was the only option. Now there is an option that lads can stay. And I actually think I would argue this now, and I've changed my view completely, in the sense that the stats prove that if you stay here now and go into a senior first team here with the likes of Bohemians or St. Pat's or Derry or Shamrock Rovers, and then you were to go away at maybe 20, having played 50, 100 senior games under your belt, you're going into a first team environment, like what we see with Liam Scales recently. Obviously Celtic are not taking him to go into an academy setup or an underage setup. He's going straight in to be part of their first team squad. Ross Tierney is after signing out for Motherwell, and he's going into Motherwell's first team. So I think that's a much better route for the lads to take, because it's so hard now to, like, we even see the lads who were all the talk about at the moment with Stephen's senior team and the emergence of Bazunu and Amabama Daly and Jason Knight, but they can't even get games at the clubs they're at. It just goes to show how difficult it is and how hard it is. So I think that's a much better route for the lads now, and I think with the emergence of the underage setups and structures, the lads can make their pathway through the 13s, 15s, 17s, 19s, go break into a first team like Ross Tierney, like Dawson Devoy or whatever. And if they don't go away, they'll make a good career for themselves here. But maybe if they were lucky enough that a club comes calling for them or whatever, that they're going into that first team environment. And I think that's a much better option for young lads.
Right, well, it'll be an interesting few years to see how it all plays out anyway, with Stephen Kenny at the helm, and of course whoever comes in as that new director of football. We've been talking about it quite a bit this week, but it is, as we know, such an important role at such an important time. We are now going to turn our attention to boxing. There is an absolutely massive fight happening overnight. Jason Quigley says that he is targeting the performance of his career to claim a huge upset over Demetrius Andrade and land the WBO middleweight title. Darren O'Neill is with us on the line now. Well, Darren, can he do it?
Look, this is going to be a very, very tough fight for him, to be honest with you. I mean, it's rare the bookies are wrong and he's going to be a huge underdog in this. But, you know, I mean, we won't rule him out. Anything's possible in boxing. And, you know, Jason is a very awkward opponent. So it's going to be an interesting fight.
Yeah, it really will. And it's getting a huge amount of coverage. Like, every turn, really, you're seeing it. So it's obviously making waves in America as it is here. It is going to be on in Rhode Island overnight. It's on in New Hampshire overnight. So yeah. Tell us a little bit about Jason's setup and also maybe his journey, for anyone that's not too familiar with him, because he's had almost, look, I'd say at this stage, it's fair to say, a pretty rocky road over the last few years. But he is back close to the top.
Yeah, I suppose, look, Jason, I suppose he started off very very well as a kid, I suppose, coming up. You know, he won a lot of underage titles, European medals and all on, and a whole lot. And, you know, he took his time kind of finding his way in the senior kind of setup. But once he did set in, I mean, he went on to get a European gold and world silver medal in 2013, I think it was. You know, so he's done quite well for himself. Look, Jason, I suppose I found a bit of a surprise him turning pro, because despite what his professional record shows, I wouldn't consider him to be a puncher. You know, but he is quite elusive. He's hard to hit. You know, he's a good mover, and, you know, as I said, quite elusive. So, you know, he kind of frustrates opponents like that, and that's what he's going to really have to do tonight, because this guy, Andrade, is very, very good. You know, he's a big puncher as well, so he needs to be very, very careful.
He has Andy Lee in his corner, though, who is hugely experienced and has a huge amount of faith in Jason as well.
Yeah, he does, of course. And look, as I say, Andy is very, very experienced himself. I think he fought for the same title. He won the same one, you know, and the same weight divisions and all the rest of that. And I suppose Andre tonight is a typical southpaw, you know, and as was Andy. So Andy can kind of see he'll kind of, I suppose, he'll understand and realise what Andre would be looking to do, what he'd be trying to expose in Jason's performance. But, you know, I suppose, can he implement a plan for Jason to pull it off? I don't know. It's going to be very, very tough. And Andy himself had come out and said that, you know, it was, he felt it was maybe a fight or two too early. He would like them to get one or more two fights under his belt after his last win, before taking this shot. But, you know, he's there now. And as I said, the title is there to be won, you know.
Yeah, he really is. And look, Boo Boo, as Andrade is being called, he does seem like he's quite overconfident, though. And if you were to maybe combine that with the fact that Andy Lee has so much background knowledge on him, do you think that maybe that might be a chink in his armour?
Look, you'd have to hope so. And that's kind of, I suppose, that's where all our kind of fate is lying. You know, obviously, as an Irish person, we want to see the Irish do well. And you know, Jason, I think it'll be a big hit in the States with the Donegal accent. Is really Irish kind of background to him, you know, the kind of way. So I think he'll put up a decent fight, but he just needs to be very, very careful. I mean, Andre's the second last fight, I think, was against another Irish opponent in Luke Keeler. You know, and within the first 4 or 5 seconds, I think he had him on a deck. So, you know, Jason just needs to be very, very careful because he does punch with both hands. Whether it's left or right hand, it doesn't matter, he'll hurt you. So he just needs to be careful, keep those hands up and keep moving.
Why has he never, Andre, never really got one of those mega fights?
Yeah, well, it's gas. I was kind of looking over his record there during the week and I kind of thought to myself, he hasn't really boxed anyone whose name we'd know. You know, like, obviously, within boxing terms, there's very good opponents on his record list, but, you know, none of them have been massive Gennady Golovkins or, you know, that kind of way, Canelos or anything like that, and he has called them out. But it may just be that he's that good, you know. You know, and he is a fantastic boxer. You know, if you go back to his amateur career, even he, you know, I know a lot of very, very good guys he beat. I think he would have beat Keith Thurman actually in the amateur or in the Olympic trials to qualify for the Beijing Olympics for the US team. So you know, they're that kind of opponent that he's in against. You know, he's won medals at major championships. An amateur, so you know he has that boxing pedigree. He has all the technical ability as well as being able to fight and punch. So I suppose these, you know, the likes of Canelo, the likes of Golovkin and these guys. I think Jason has even come out and said, you know, it's high risk with low reward. So you know, unless they're looking to unify something and get massive money, there's no real benefit to inviting them.
Darren, if you flip that round though the other way, and as you said, he hasn't fought any kind of household superstar names that we would know of, does that give Jason hope then for the fight tonight? Because we may not know just how good this fella is.
Look, you'd be hoping it's, I won't say a chink in his armour, but you'd be hoping it'll give Jason some confidence going into this fight, you know, and be thinking to himself. I mean, he was calling out Canelo there, Jason was calling out Canelo a few months back, you know, and he's beaten Shane Mosley Jr. recently. I know Mosley Jr. isn't his dad, but he's still a Mosley, and you know, a very, very good boxer at that. So you know, as long as his confidence is high, you know, and he doesn't get hurt in the early rounds, then he has a fighter's chance. But you know, he's really up against it all.
Well, let's hear what Jason Quigley had to say earlier this week.
Yeah, you know what, I have a lot of fuel and I have a lot of fire in me anyway, but that just kind of adds a little diesel or petrol to the fire as it is. And yeah, you know, look, I'm getting in there and the more people write me off, the less pressure there's going to be on you. You know what I mean? You have your own ambitions and your own goals to get in there, to win a world title, to be a world champion, and to beat Demetrius Andre on fight night. So, but all these people that write you off and say whatever they want to say, it's just more fuel for me, and it makes it even more exciting for me. Like, because as I said before, look, he's a great champion. I've actually watched him through his amateur career. He's a few years older than me, so before I was kind of on the senior panel, the senior cycle on the Irish team. I remember watching him in the Chicago World Championships where he won them, and you know, I thought he was a special talent back then, and to be so far on in my career now and challenge him for the world title, you know, it's a great blessing.
Jason Quigley there speaking ahead of tonight's fight. He does sound confident, but I suppose he has to be, Darren. He's taken a bit of, I guess, confidence in the fact that everybody is writing him off. He seems to like having that underdog tag. But if you were to just maybe tell us how you think it's going to, how is it going to play out for Jason if he doesn't get success tonight?
That's a tough question. Look, I don't know. I mean, look, he's already suffered defeat, so, and he's come back from it. Because Andre is such an opponent, such a formidable force, I mean, there'd be no shame in losing to him, you know, if it doesn't go well for him. But, you know, it's kind of, it's the problem with the pro game, you know. In an amateur game, you lose a fight and you just get back in the next fight and you start again and that's it. But in the pro game, you kind of have to rebuild yourself. So he'll probably, if he doesn't come out successful tonight, or if it goes disastrous for him, he'll probably have to come back down a few levels, you know, take off and take out a few kind of journeymen, just to build back up his confidence, build back up his reputation and his record, you know, before he starts, I suppose, calling out big guys again. But, you know, please God, it goes well for him.
Yeah, because he does have that real likability and marketability and the personality, and as you said, that Donegal accent, he has it all. If you could just get that win now, he'd be on the pig's back. And Darren, what about you? How are things going for you? The last time that we spoke to you, you had come out of retirement, you were fighting in the Nationals, and yeah, now as it stands, you are the National Cruiserweight Champ.
Yeah, a bit different now from I suppose, if you were talking to this time last year, there was no chance of me ever fighting. You know, so look, I'm obviously delighted with the win. It was fantastic to be back in business, you know, back in the ring. Back, it just felt like being home again. You know, and it was a lovely experience. It was just, I suppose, the only thing you could have asked for was that maybe the stadium could have been full and packed, you know, in a way. But other than that, I mean, it was just great to be back there, back among it and enjoying it. You know, and we had a few nice weeks, I suppose at the time it wasn't because you're training hard, but when you look back on it, it was a few nice weeks back training, I suppose, with my dad and brothers again, and you know, getting things back in track and trying to get the boxing band back into it, and it brought a bit of enjoyment to the club as well, you know, because things have been shut down for so long, you know, so it was lovely to get the win. And you know, so, unfortunately I would have liked to go to the World Championships, but that wasn't to be the case, so what can you do?
So what's next then?
That's a great question.
I'm asking all the good ones tonight, Darren. It's Friday, you know.
Yeah. I think we'll have to wait and see what happens with the AABA before we make any decisions on that out front. Unfortunately, things are a little bit up in the air at the minute, in that sense, so nobody kind of knows what's happening in boxing in Ireland at the minute, to be honest.
Yeah, well, you summed it up there in those last few words. Nobody really knows what's happening at the minute, no. So I'm not going to get you to go into too much detail, because it seems to be a wait and see and hope for the best as it stands. We've spoken about it quite a bit over the last few weeks, and no doubt we'll be speaking about it a lot more as well over the coming weeks, but hopefully things will get sorted out soon. Darren, thank you so much for joining us. Thanks, and we do wish Jason Quigley as well the best of luck tonight.
Absolutely.
We're going to take a quick break now.
Green Fern, have your dinner ready in a flash with Green Fern's high protein cooked chicken breast fillet, available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Now, Andy Farrell has made four changes to the Ireland side to face Argentina on Sunday. Ulster wing Robert Balakoon, Leinster centre Robbie Henshaw, and Munster halfbacks Joey Carberry and Conor Murray return to the team as expected. Out half and captain Johnny Sexton and scrum half Jemison Gibson-Park were ruled out after suffering injuries in that win over New Zealand last Saturday. Let's hear from Andy Farrell.
Yeah, I suppose selection is the same every week. He's making sure that we get the balance right. We've a few force changes, and we've one or two that we want to have a look at as well. So we've obviously got some force changes because of some injuries there at halfback. So that changes things up a little bit. But we're excited to see Connor back and Joey starting. In a good team, you know, with a good forward pack behind him, and obviously Robbie coming back in, he's great for him and the team. And then seeing Robert Balakoon get his chance on the wing, like I said at the start, to get the balance right, to make sure that those lads are able to do the jobs properly is absolutely key.
Now that's Andy Farrell, the Ireland rugby head coach. Alan Cawley is with me in studio. Alan, you enjoyed that Ireland All Blacks game last weekend. I know what you're at. You know there's a World Cup coming. You know that Ireland are playing well and you love a bandwagon, so you're getting on now. You're on early.
I'm not a bandwagon person, Marie. I'm not. I've said it many times. I don't really follow the rugby that much, but I did watch last week and I have to say they were absolutely unbelievable. It was probably the best game I've seen of rugby and probably the best I've seen Ireland. I thought they were unbelievable. The whole match was amazing. Obviously the All Blacks thing helps, but they were so good. It was honestly amazing. And I just said to you off here, I'm going to say something now that you probably never ever thought you'd hear me say, but they were absolutely brilliant. And you know what I like about it? And there's almost a parallel with Stephen and the Irish team with the soccer and the way we're trying to play and be more progressive. And obviously Joe Schmidt did an unbelievable job when he was here. But I love the fact that they were just kind of a bit adventurous and going out and throwing the ball around. Is that the phrase they use in the rugby? Throw the ball around and I'll see, I'm listening.
Ball in play, we're going with now.
Okay.
I can't believe you don't love a bandwagon. I love bandwagons. Anything that's going well, like, I'm on it. Like the women's hockey team that time didn't really have a huge interest
in that.
Hockey. Mad into it.
No.
When cricket's in...
No, I love
cricket.
Telly,
I'm straight on it. Tennis, Wimbledon, anything. You give me someone, a team that are going well and I am 2 foot in, away I go.
No, I'm not a bandwagon person, but I just follow a lot of the sports. So obviously the GAA, the hurling, love them. Rugby will be low down the list, I have to say. I just can't get the whole rugby thing at all. Just big fellas running into each other. Now, the fellas that take the kicks, they're the skillful ones. And I've always said this. And the lad that came on, obviously, Carberry, was it from the half line? Unbelievable. To just walk on the pitch and do that was phenomenal. So I loved that. And I always loved Ron Nogara and Sexton. But the little fella, Jameson Gibson Park, he was deadly as well.
Right. Well, you want to watch the Argentina
rugby analysis
game.
There, isn't it?
You're going to watch the Argentina game on Sunday.
No.
If you are, then I'll call you a bandwagoner. Okay, well, the Premier League is back, so you'll probably be flat out watching that because it feels like it's been gone for ages. I think maybe because so much happened with the Republic of Ireland men's team and those enjoyable performances that I didn't really miss it at all. And now that it's back, it's almost taken me by surprise. I have to get on doing my fantasy team and my last man standings and my predictions and all that sort of stuff. Fergal Brennan is with me here. Before I make any decisions, I will be getting the expert opinions of yourself. And Fergal, how are you? I haven't spoken to you now in a while. How's everything?
Very good. Yeah, I'm in a similar position with the international break. You kind of lose the run of yourself and the days tend to add up and then you think, oh, Premier League's back, right? Back to the day job. But looking forward to it. It's a big weekend. Obviously, all 20 teams in action. 8 games on Saturday and 2 on Sunday. So, yeah, no rest for the wicked, really, in terms of covering these games.
Yeah, and Alan, there's so many talking points as well. And, like, there's only one place to start, really, and that's managers. So we have our new managers coming in, like Howe and Gerard and Dean Smith. Well, new, and I say new, they're going to be managing different teams in the league, and some of them have new teams as well. But now we're going to have as well the focus on the ones that are under a little pressure again too. And look, is Ollie under pressure now?
He's under pressure every week, Marie. He's under pressure every match, you would have to say. And that's been the crazy thing about Solskjaer is that, and I think that goes back to the fact that it just goes to show the lack of belief people have in him, that literally one game changes the whole outlook from everybody on his tenure. Whereas, as I always maintained, the top managers can lose a couple of games. Nobody's coming out questioning them or crisis talks or anything like that. There's no uncertainty around their future. Whereas as soon as Solskjaer loses a game, straight away everybody's on in terms of he's not the man for the job, he's not this, he's not that. And I don't think that's ever going to go away, Marie. It really isn't. Now, you may look at the game that they have on Saturday, Watford away, and well, you can look at it two ways in the sense that you'd be thinking if you're Man United it's a good fixture to start back with because you'd fancy your chances normally against Watford, but then you factor in the Solskjaer thing and if he was to lose against Watford, when is the end for this fella? Like, you know, I'm just not sure. So I thought it would have come by now. I was sure, you mentioned there the fact that the international break and obviously it was 2 weeks and it felt probably a bit longer. I was sure by this stage Man United would have a new manager in place. I'm surprised that they haven't and maybe they couldn't reach agreement. I know Rodgers, there was talk of that and maybe he didn't want to leave Leicester or how far down the tracks were they maybe and if there was ever negotiations with him. But I always felt that they would have a manager in place. So it surprises me that there isn't, but I'm not sure much longer how it can carry on for Solskjaer, Marie.
Well, I think maybe tomorrow, like that game's kicking off against Watford at 3 o'clock. After that, we might understand whether or not he's been able to reset things. It'll probably be a good indicator of what's coming down the track. Something else we'll probably have a good grasp on as well is I think Spurs, and I think particularly Fergal Harry Kane. So he had a really good international window. He found the net, I don't know how many times it was to win.
Seven.
Was it seven times he got? Jeez, I didn't think it was that many, but seven times for England in the international window. So you'd be expecting him to come out firing for Spurs now after the break, but who knows, really?
You would indeed. I mean, looking at the situation with Harry Kane so far this season, it's been very stop-start, particularly in terms of Tottenham, when Tottenham have not had the greatest of starts. Obviously, the situation with Nuno Santo coming in, short-lived. He's now been removed. Antonio Conte has come in. But England, for Harry Kane, has been a bit of a safe haven across the three windows so far this season. When he's gone away with the England team, he's generally scored goals and he's played well. But he's only got one Premier League goal to his name for Tottenham so far this season. And Antonio Conte, there's so much attention around what he is going to do, what he's expected to do. I think job number one on his checklist is finding out what is wrong with Harry Kane in terms of his performances, because not buried too deep down, you're still dealing with one of the best strikers in the Premier League. And as I say, one goal so far in the Premier League this season is not a reflection of how good Harry Kane is. I don't think this is going to be a long-standing thing. I don't think Harry Kane kicking back into form will take too long. But Antonio Conte is a really demanding character. They've got Leeds this weekend, who've been relatively hit and miss themselves so far this season. So Conte needs Harry Kane to start scoring goals. Harry Kane wants to start scoring goals, whether that's to maintain his place at Tottenham or strengthen his case in January or next summer to look to move on. So everybody involved in the situation needs each other to start pulling in the right direction. I expect them to start doing that. Conte's had a little bit of time over the international break to kind of get his methods across. They've not had a massive amount of players away on international duty. First game at Everton was a little bit drab, and not really a sign of what we expect from Conte in the next few months. So given the position that he's in at Tottenham, I expect them to start clicking into gear. And Harry Kane, we know that he is still a fantastic player. It's not been an ideal situation for him. And if Antonio Conte can spark that into life as quickly as possible, I think you'll see Tottenham start to rocket up the table.
You mentioned the fact, Emery, of Solskjaer. Was he be able to reset? I'm really interested to see exactly Conte, because when they made the decision, I'd say it was a view to the international break coming up and that he would have 2 weeks to work with the players or whatever that was there and get his idea across in terms of what he's trying to do. And I would agree with Fergal in terms of Harry Kane. I don't think it'll be long before he sparks into action. But I think he's got a lot of unwarranted stick as well, Marie, because even the weekend I was over at the match, you look at, they've only scored 9 goals, Spurs, as a team themselves. Like, we've gone through the last 2, 3, 4 seasons where Harry Kane would have 9 goals in 11 games himself at this stage nearly. I would actually cut him a little bit slack, because the players that are behind him, and in terms of Nuno's setup and the way they were trying to play, there was such a lack of creativity in the team, such a lack of adventure in the team as well. And he's reliant on service. And when you think of Pochettino and the great team that he had there, and when they were doing really well, and had Dembele and Eriksen, Dele Alli was on fire at the time as well, and Son obviously contributing to assists along with goals with Kane, it's a completely different team now. So I would cut him a little bit of slack. It's probably good that he's gone away. I know the teams he scored the goals against, obviously you wouldn't look too much into that, but just the fact that he's hitting the back of the net again, but they're the second lowest scorers in the league, which is a pretty bad stat when you look at Spurs and what they're trying to achieve, and Norwich have only scored less than 5 goals, so it just tells you the problems that they have. But I don't think it'll be long before they kick into action.
It's very hard to have any sympathy for him, really, because his behaviour in the pre-season set the tone really for what was to come for that Spurs team. So if he hadn't done that, you'd wonder maybe would they have functioned better, and the players then that he would be relying on to create the chances for him would probably be more motivated to do so if he'd actually turned up to pre-season training. So I'd have absolutely zero sympathy for him. Right, moving on to Liverpool. Moving on to Liverpool now. Fergal, they're playing Arsenal. Actually, Arsenal is probably the team I'm more interested in this one now, because you'd have to think this is probably one of the biggest tests they're going to have faced. They've had a run of consistent form before the break, but I think a bit like a lot of the other teams here now, we'll know a bit more about what they're about after this game.
Definitely. I think this is the test in terms of Arsenal so far this season. Cast your mind back to the start of the campaign. Arsenal were bottom of the table. There was speculation over whether Mikel Arteta would remain in charge. And you look through this run of form, 10 games unbeaten, but with the greatest respect to most of the teams that are involved in it, other than Tottenham and Leicester, every other one of those games you'd expect Arsenal to either win or, worst case scenario, get a draw out of. The Tottenham game was one of Nuno Santo's last ones, so that was a little bit of a bye for Arteta. the Leicester performance was good. They got 3 points away from home. Leicester maybe not quite matching expectation based on what was expected of them at the start of the campaign, but this is the one now for Arsenal and for Arteta, because as well as measuring themselves against the side that are challenging for the Premier League title, regularly challenging for top four qualification, it's as much of a mental test. Like, I'm just looking over the record here in terms of Arsenal's record at Anfield. They're unbeaten, Liverpool are unbeaten under Klopp at Anfield against Arsenal in the Premier League. And it's not just wins, they've battered Arsenal at Anfield in recent seasons, 3, 4, 5 goals against, a pretty regular occurrence. And it goes back to 2012, that was the last time that Arsenal won at Anfield, and Mikel Arteta was in the Arsenal midfield that day. That's kind of how long we're talking. And I think one of the great criticisms or questions against Arsenal is this idea of a mentality, and that's still there. There's lots of positivity, lots of good signs that they're moving in the right direction, but there's still a massive elephant in the room over their mentality when it comes to big games away from home at Anfield, Old Trafford, the Etihad, etc. So it's going to be a massive test for them tomorrow. I think anything in terms of a result, even if they get a draw, I think that will be a positive, because the other side of that, then they kind of kick into a slightly more favourable run of games between now and Christmas. But this is a big test for them. Obviously, Liverpool are looking at this wanting to kind of keep themselves going and keep themselves in the title race, but all the focus will be on Arsenal and Arteta and how they react to what's going to be a difficult game for them tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow at 5:30, that's kicking off at Man City and Everton. Man City are going to be without Kevin De Bruyne. He's tested positive for COVID-19, Alan, and he's going to miss a few games. He's going to have to isolate for 10 games. He's going to miss that Everton game, and then he's going to miss the one against PSG as well. But would you think that Manchester City have enough depth to be able to do without him for such crucial games?
Yeah, I think if any club could deal with losing De Bruyne, and we saw that last year when he had a long layoff as well, it is Man City. So obviously Guardiola will be disappointed that he picked it up. How can you control these things, I suppose, especially on international duty, Marie? And he will miss crucial games, but I still think they'll have enough to get by Everton. The PSG game is obviously a big one, but to be fair to him, in that first round game against PSG a couple of weeks back, I thought they were absolutely brilliant that night. So I don't think PSG will hold too many worries for Guardiola either. And especially at this stage of the competition, they'd be looking at, obviously, after Christmas, after they come through the qualifying stages and the knockout rounds. It is a blow, but certainly with the quality and strength and depth that they have, like, they're keeping Grealish on the bench, a £100 million player. So it just goes to show you the quality that they have, Man City. And I think they'll have too much for Everton.
So Eddie Howe is going to get his first taste of life in charge of Newcastle against Brentford, Fergal, tomorrow at 3:00. And as tests go, I don't know if I'd like to play Brentford. Maybe it's because I still have the memories of that opening day of the season against Arsenal, when they were just seemed unstoppable, and they definitely love to rise to a challenge. And going up against Newcastle with Eddie Howe, and I know they haven't, you know, bolstered their team yet or anything, but still, there's probably a bit of a target on Newcastle now already.
There is. This is a difficult one to call, because Brentford's kind of honeymoon period has come to an end in the last few weeks. They've lost the last four in the Premier League, and I know there's been difficult games mixed into that, but they've lost against Burnley, and they lost at home to Norwich before the international break. And Newcastle, it's again a difficult one to kind of get a handle on, because things are still so fresh and new in terms of Eddie Howe. He said in his press conference today that he's not actually seen Newcastle in the daylight. He's been working that hard, that he's been going in so early and going home so late, that he's not really had a chance to see the city and kind of get involved in things. He knows that the task ahead of him is pretty basic in terms of making sure they get enough points to get out of the relegation zone and look to power up the table a little bit. All this talk of massive spending in January or next summer in terms of building for the future, that's all has to be put on the back burner, because Newcastle have been dreadful so far this season, still without a win in terms of the Premier League. And he knows that there's no way to kind of sugarcoat that situation. All the speculation of who they might buy and bring in, that has to get put away, put to the side for now, because they've got a really difficult run of games where they need to start getting points. But the positivity that he brings into the club, the type of character that he is, and how dedicated and diligent he'll be in terms of extracting the best from the Newcastle squad will be really, really important. I do quite fancy Newcastle to win this one this weekend. I think, obviously, home advantage. St James's Park will be packed. It'll be loud. It's his first game in front of the crowd. And Brentford, things have gone a little bit difficult for them in the last few weeks, and they need to regroup. Maybe they will have done that over the international break, but you just sense that a lot of the narrative is surrounding Newcastle and Eddie Howe this weekend.
It'll be a big one for Steven Gerrard as well against Brighton. A huge amount of interest in to see how he gets on. And I guess he's really going to have to start, hit the ground running, Al.
Yeah, of course. Look, Gerrard was obviously one of the best players that we've ever seen in the Premier League. Huge figure, an iconic Premier League player. And obviously the fact that he's turned to management now, of course, did a good job at Rangers, but made the decision to come back to the Premier League. I think it's good as well. I'm looking forward to seeing how he gets, how he's going to get on, Marie. And I think he did it the right way in the sense that he did go out and cut his teeth in the SPL and wait for the job to come along in the Premier League. And he probably feels much more equipped now and better, a much better position. Obviously, is the experience of McAllister coming in with him as well and brought his coach and staff as such down from Scotland with him. So I think it's good for the league, and I also think it's good for Gerrard as well, because I'm sure he has aspirations down the line. He was obviously a very ambitious player when he played and very determined and wanted to succeed and do very well. I'm sure he'll be no different as a manager, and of course he'll have aspirations, as I say, down the line to maybe one day manage Liverpool. Whether he was ever going to get the Liverpool job off the back of achieving in Scotland, I don't think so. So I think maybe he recognised that himself, Marie, and he's come down obviously to take over Villa, who are a massive club in their own right themselves. And if he was to do a good job and be successful, I think he's much more equipped then to take over a Liverpool if that's what he wants to do, maybe down the line. But I don't think players like that as well, I don't think they have a choice, and they have to earn their stripes. Just because you were a brilliant player, I don't think you're going to get handed the job of a Liverpool or one of the top clubs, especially when they have an unbelievable manager there as it is. So I think he'll have to deliver at Aston Villa, but I've always liked Gerrard and I hope he does do well.
Frank Lampard spoiled it for all of them. Fergal, thank you so much for joining us. Alan, stay with us, because I want to very quickly talk about the Women's FAI Cup final. We did preview with Lisa Fallon last night, but just a little bit more on it, because Vera Powell named her squad for the upcoming games against Slovakia and Georgia, those World Cup qualifiers. And there's some girls that are going to be playing at the weekend in the final, going to be in her plans for the next couple of weeks. So Alan Malloy, Aveen Clancy from Wexford Utes, and Kira Grant and Saoirse Noonan will all link up with the panel after Sunday's final. And you know, we're talking about the men's team and that connection with the domestic game, and it's brilliant to see it as well here on the women's side.
Absolutely, and they're there on merit as well. I think those girls have been brilliant. Obviously, we discussed earlier in the week, Marie, the dramatic scenes that we saw in Piemont last week, and I think it's a wise move by Vera as well, calling up a couple of the girls off the back of the seasons that they've had going into the cup final. It'll give them a huge boost, especially Ellen. I think she's only 17 as well, so it's a hell of an achievement for her. So she should be full of confidence going into the game Sunday. I think I heard there's about 3,500 tickets sold as well, and I think it's brilliant. I know we've had this discussion before about the final being a standalone fixture and in Tala. And Tala has almost become the home of the women's game now, with the international matches being held there. So I think it's really important for them that to get their day out there as well. And it'll be a really good game. I was only even looking back at some previous stats around the cup final there, and Wexford Utes have obviously won it in 18 and 19. I think the last time Shelburne won it was 16, and they beat Wexford Utes heavily in the final, but this will be anything but. We obviously saw the tight game last week. It was 3-2 to Shelburne. They only finished 6 points off Shelburne in the league race as well, so they were very much in the title race, Wexford Utes as well. So I think it'll be a tough game for Shelburne, but I'm going to go towards Shelburne purely off the back of the fact that they won the league last week, and the momentum and I suppose the celebrations that we've seen with them last week will carry them into the final as well, and I think they'll get the job done.
Well, that game is live on RTE television at 5:30 p.m. It's on RTE 2 and the RTE player, and there's a live commentary on RTE Radio 1 Extra. So it's Wexford's Utes playing Shelburne in that final. Let's hear from the two captains, Pearl Slattery and Kylie Murphy.
This is what you dream about as a player. This is why we give up so much. You know, it's great for the club, the girls, the staff, all the volunteers who give us so much, your family, your friends now to come in and have a day out now on Sunday together and enjoy the buzz of it as well. I think that's important, and we'll go out Sunday and like we did Saturday night, we're focused to win the game and let's see what happens.
I suppose in the latter years, the cup finals before, I suppose I've gone into them thinking, oh my god, if we don't win, and oh my god this, and just panic mode, and I've been so nervous, you know. And it's not to say that I'm not nervous about Sunday, but I suppose this Sunday I can definitely, it's more of an excited nervous, and this and the run up to it and all week, it's just, I suppose now I'm probably taking things in an awful lot more, and I'm appreciating them a lot more, because do you know, it's quite possible it could be my last time to play in a cup final. You know, it just, you don't know what's going to happen or where life is going to take you. So I'm really, really enjoying it and just taking everything in as best I can.
With Green Farm. Fuel your day the healthy way with Green Farm's on-the-go chicken bites. 100% natural and packed with protein. Available in selected Tesco's nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. As you heard in the ad break, we are celebrating Stand Up Awareness Week here on 2FM. And did you know that 56% of LGBTI and young people in 2021 are not fully accepted in their home environment? And that is why here on 2FM, we are so proud to support Stand Up Awareness Week. This time is a time for second level students to take a stand against homophobic, biphobic and transphobic bullying. And it all culminated in Rainbow Jumper Day today, where schools wore the different colours of the rainbow to school to highlight their support. So all week long, you'll have heard stories of people who have used the services of Belong To. They're a national organisation supporting LGBTI and people in Ireland. And we say a huge thank you to everybody for their time. Now, I'm delighted to say we are going to welcome someone live on the line to talk about their own experiences. Hello, Jack Woolley. How are you?
How are you? I'm well.
Thanks so much for coming on. This is a really important campaign that we're running here on 2FM. And the more people we talk to and the more experiences that are shared, the better we believe it is going to be for everybody. And Jack, like, you're a very high profile person. You're Ireland's first ever Taekwondo Olympian. You've been in the headlines because of everything that you've been doing for your community and all your different communities as well. Just how have you found your experience as being in the spotlight?
I actually quite enjoy being in the spotlight. Like, there's been lots of different things that have happened over the years, like not just sport, but like personal things that have come out in the media, and like obviously with recent events in the last few months. But I try to take things as positively as possible. I don't let things have a negative impact on me, because with being a sports person, you can't have things like that affect your performance. So trying to stay as level-headed as possible is something I try to do day to day.
Something that I've noticed about you as well, that you're somebody that always uses your voice. Is that a difficult thing to do, given that you are a young person as well?
No, I don't find it to be a difficult thing, because I've kind of grown up with that. Like, I've never had any issues at home or anything like that. So I've just been brought up to be very honest and open. So, like, whether it's personal things, whether it's got to do with sport or anything like that, I'm just very open. I'll answer the questions people ask. I'll just be, I'm very open, and I think that being a sports person and being like that, it's very uncommon nowadays. But I kind of want to show people that, you know, you can be the person you are, and also be in your profession too. So
when you hear statistics like 56% of LGBTI and young people in 2021 are not fully accepted in their home environment, how does that make you feel?
It's shocking to me, because like I said, I've never had any of those issues. So it never really hit me up until like the last couple of years of being an out athlete and hearing other people's stories, because I never had to like deal with it. I never really heard about it. So I was never involved too much, but it's absolutely shocking to hear stuff like that. It's still going on in 2021. Like, I feel like that we've kind of gotten a lot better in recent years, but still 56% is it's a massive number, and we still need to be working, not just thinking, okay, that we've progressed so much in the last maybe 5-10 years with equality and gay marriage being legalised, but, you know, kind of pushing that even more and getting that 56% down. Like I said, luckily I'm part of the 44%. I never had to have experienced any homophobia or any of that. So, but using my voice, being open, being transparent in the media, it's something I think that I can be working on as well in the next few years, and hopefully bring that 56% down.
And while it's important to hear that there's 56% who are finding it tough, it's also really good, Jack, to hear stories like yours as well, to know that, you know, it's not always negative, and that there are going to be positive experiences if you do want to come out, that, you know, that there will be people there to support you, and environments as well where you feel comfortable and can be yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, you hear a lot in the media of like the negative aspects of things, and, you know, it can get quite dull, depressing, and some people they kind of get down and they're getting sick of hearing it. But it's definitely a positive thing to hear about all the good that is also around the subject. So you've got like Tom Daly, who's obviously an open gay athlete and is married and has his own kid and stuff like that. So I think that kind of shares a positive light, and not say I don't want to copy people, but I want to also kind of be a role model for people in Ireland. You know, it's very unheard of in our country to have athletes like myself. So just kind of use that platform and just be as positive as possible.
We saw you in the headlines recently enough, Jack. It was really, really tough to see. Actually, you were viciously attacked on the street, and since then it's actually been really good to see you back in action as well, and not just competing but actually winning. So since the Olympics and since that vicious attack, you've got 2 gold medals at different events.
The attack, and then we came back and I got 2 gold medals in a row, so Albania and Montenegro. And then recently, I'm actually only back yesterday from another trip away, so I was at the French Open, which I got silver at last week, and then I flew straight from France to Bosnia and I won that as well, so I've had 4 medals now.
So you've had 4 medals since then.
Yeah, 3 golds and 1 silver, so it's just been all go, and we're back in the ring again next weekend in Austria, so you know, there's no stop until after this last one, and then we're having a bit of a rest for Christmas. So,
well, Jack, it is very well deserved. Congratulations on your success, but also congratulations as well on your attitude. It's so positive, so refreshing, and so enjoyable. You're so enjoyable to talk to. And next time we do talk, we're going to get more into the sport, because it's fascinating as well to see what you've been able to achieve since you have become Ireland's first taekwondo athlete at the Olympics. So we will talk to you soon. Thanks so much.
Dinners made easy with Green Farm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillets range. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Now it is time to talk racing. Jane Mangan is with us on the line. Jane, I feel like things are getting back to normal. Rachel Blackmore and Henry de Bromhead are teaming up with Aplu Tar in the Betfair Chase at Haydock tomorrow. Is it a case of just them picking up where they left off last season?
Well, a lot of Irish fans will be hoping that, Marie. Look, they plundered so many prizes in the UK last year. I suppose de Bromhead in particular being responsible for that sacred quartet, the Champion Hurdle, Champion Chase, Grand National and the Gold Cup. And this horse was narrowly denied in the Gold Cup by his very own Manila Indo. Rachel Blackmore chose Aplu Tar on that occasion, and she wasn't far wrong. And I think this guy, he's still a young horse. He's a very much one of the best horses this side of the British Isles. And I think going over to the Betfair Chase, the left-handed track seems to be important to him, so Haydock should suit. Aplu Tar has a rating of 172. For good reason. But he will have to beat Bristol DeMay, who loves this race. He's won it 3 times. He's going after Cato Starr's record of 4 wins in the Betfair Chase. Can he do it? I don't know. I think the younger legs might just tell. Next destination for Paul Nicholls. He was second to Galvin in the National Hunt Chase at Cheltenham. We also saw how well Galvin ran against Frodon at Down Royal. And don't forget, we have another Irish runner in the very same race. Chatham Street Lad runs for Mick Winters and Sean Quinlan. He's going to have to improve an awful lot to figure. But Aplu Tar, he's one of the mainstays at Henry de Bromhead's yard. And this year could be his best yet.
Well, de Bromhead and Blackmore will also be keeping an eye on Goran Park tomorrow. Bob Ollinger makes his much-anticipated debut over fences.
He really, yeah. I was so disappointed having been in Punchestown last weekend that he didn't run. And I'm blessed now that I'm actually going to be in Goran tomorrow to see him make his debut over fences. Darragh O'Keefe comes in for that plum spare ride. Bob Ollinger was many people's banker at Cheltenham last year when he dotted up at the Ballymore. He beat Galliard de Menil, who subsequently won a Punchestown Grade 1. Brave Man's Game was the big British hope, and he blew him away. Bob Ollinger is probably one of the most exciting horses in training. He's a point-to-point winner, so you'd imagine going over fences won't be a problem to him. But as beginner's chases go, Marie, the Cardies is in there. Ashdale Bob is in there. Colleen McFire is in there. There's 18 runners. This is a competitive beginner's chase, but Bob Ollinger is the big name.
And the RTE cameras will be in Navan on Sunday for their marquee meeting featuring the Troy Town Chase.
Yes, from 1:40 on RTE on Sunday for, I think this is the 100th year racing in Navan. They're celebrating a centenary. And the Troy Town Chase is for staying chases. It's a real stamina test. Michael O'Leary has ample amount of representations in here. He's the 2018 winner to a Permee. He's got far class. He looks like a class horse. And Davy Russell, who would have had the choice of a few mounts, he has gone for Run Wild Fred. But I like Mr. Fog Patches in there for Pat Fahey and Richie Deegan. I think he can, he's a real stamina horse. Whether the ground will be soft enough for him is another thing. And Another race on that very same card is the Monksfield Hurdle. It's a novice hurdle. Gordon Elliott very strongly represented with Ginto and Hollow Games. This race usually throws up a good one, but across all the weekend, Britain and Ireland, Marie, this is a very, very interesting weekend for National Hunt fans.